wasn't sure I'd ever step out and do my own thing. It took this place to do it.
And it is Virginia Tech. This isn't some rinky-dink ass program.
I don't know if I could follow that one up.
I'm yelling into the void, and that's what I like doing.
Pete, nobody's looking at your tweets.
We're going to recruit our footprint, and we're going to work our tails off to bring those Virginia kids to Blacksburg.
Those situations are the worst when you are on top of another guy.
The relationships are very important to me. That's what this place is built on.
That's your boy. That's your judge of character.
I'm going to end up in a Columbia prison.
That 95 Miami is my fondest memory. And maybe the experience after the Sugar Bowl with Wes Worsham and J.C. Price on Bourbon Street. Come on, J.C.
I want to know what you're drinking, Robbie.
It is roasty goodness, even though I was out.
What's the percent on that?
11.
It was a dream come true back then, and it's a dream come true today.
Hey, Mom, why don't you try a rail?
We're going to put this old guy in a grave.
For the love of the game.
And I mow the lawn after work before the podcast.
We just got better, guys.
Welcome to Two Deep Hokies Under the Influence, a Sons of Saturday podcast. I'm your host, Pete B. And as always, I got my co-host, Sam Jesse, here. And if you're watching on YouTube, I've got a third guest co-host, whatever you want to call him tonight. Coach Mike Holmes from the Hokie Hitter has joined us. Mike, how you doing, man?
I'm doing great. I've been a longtime listener going all the way back to the mid-teens when y'all started. And I love everything in the Hokie space, so thanks for having me on.
Yeah, we've been talking about this for a while, trying to get Mike on, figuring out when the best time was. And he had some observations that he kind of was texting to me and Sam. And I was like, you know what? We got to do this now. This is the perfect time. And so he's going to help us break down the spring game, everything you guys saw on Saturday. Sam and I were in town. We had fun. We'll talk about that. But for now, Sam, start us off with the cheers.
Well, you know, usually our cheers are very jovial and things like that. But we're recording this Tuesday, April 16th at about 8:04 p.m. And, you know, obviously Virginia Tech April 16th is a day that is in the minds of a lot of Hokies and for all the wrong reasons. But in some ways, all the right reasons. It's something that brought Hokie Nation together permanently, I think, is, you know, something that is still talked about openly between Hokie Nation and with memories. And, you know, we come together every spring to remember those who were lost on April 16th, 2006, and also to, you know, I think live out our lives in the best way that we can for them. And there are so many great community events that happen in Blacksburg around the time. You have the run 3.2 for 32 run, which had, this is crazy, over 18,000 runners. For the 3.2 for
and Sam was one of them,
and I was one of them. You have the spring game. Always play a baseball and softball game that night. Baseball's playing Radford right now. Softball's playing UVA. I think just the way that the Hokie community comes together on April 16th is really, really beautiful, and it makes me very, very proud to be a Hokie.
Yeah, cheers to that, man. Yeah, it was, you know, that weekend and the spring game weekend being so close to April 16th, it offers a lot of opportunity to honor those who we lost. And the 3.2 for 32 is a great event. And I know at the finish line, you said there was Coach Pry and several players there, like high-fiving people, correct?
Yeah, and the players that weren't at the finish line were actually lined up in Lane Stadium. You run through the tunnel and you run down the home sideline and then cut across the away tunnel and then go back through, you know, to Center Street behind Stadium Woods. The entire team was part of it. Not only them, but you have, you know, a cappella groups singing the fight song. You have marching Virginians lined up there. So they really go all out. And it's even if you don't run, even if you walk it, highly, highly recommend signing up.
Yeah. So let's talk about spring game weekend. And Mike, feel free to jump in if you want to. I know you weren't around, but if you have any questions.
I was there in spirit.
Yeah, man, I know. We were missing you. And it was so much fun. Dude, Spring Jam was awesome. The boys did a great job getting that together. I know they were dog tired that night and into the next morning, particularly maybe our friend Billy Ray Mitchell was cutting loose because of all that work he had put in to get guys like Tyrod there. And the Edmonds brothers and Coach Price and Bud Foster and so many more that showed up. It is just being a regular fan of Tech for a long, long time. Like it makes me feel cool being there around all those guys that have accomplished so much with our program. You know, like it is, and I know Sam, me and you were working the door together and just seeing the people coming in, you're like, wow, I can't believe this person's here and this person.
Insane amount of people, like over, probably over 400 people walk through those doors that night.
I would imagine so. Yeah.
That's probably a low balling it. And just to see everybody there hanging out as a community, it's not, you know, the players and coaches sit over here and everyone else is over there. Oh, it's a bunch of intermingling, talking, telling stories, buying drinks for each other. If you're there next year, you need to come. You need to come.
I need to have a, I have a question for Mike. Is that if you're at the Spring Jam and there's one former Hokie that's still with us alive, who would you want to talk to? Who would you most want to bend the ear of for a minute?
Ooh, I know that's a really good question. It's kind of hard to put on the spot. I actually would love to talk with Jake Grove.
Nice. That's a good one.
Former offensive lineman, all American, but being a football coach, I love talking to the linemen because they're the unsung heroes. I feel like they don't get all the pub that the Tyrods and the Michael Vicks of the world that they get. Those linemen, though, they're the nitty gritty. They're the ones that make it happen. So I think Jake Grove, plus he was a straight up dog.
Yeah,
he was there. He was known as, he was like the most nasty lineman that we've ever had. And I just love to get into his brain a little bit and pick it.
Yeah. I got to talk to JC for a second and that was really cool to me. Like just, he's very large man and getting to talk to JC Price, a Hokie player, great. And now really doing a great job on the D line. Like that was really cool for me. I saw Will Stewart, Chris Coleman, talked to them for a little bit. So many more. Silas Janzi walked in and oh my God, he is just gigantic. big men.
I will never get over how big Tremaine Edmonds is. Like it's shocking. It is truly, truly shocking. And, but everyone's like super nice, super friendly, excited to be there, happy to be there. You know, what we hear from the players all the time is just how thankful and appreciative they are of having a space to come back to campus and having all that facilitated to them. They have a Letterman's banquet as well. And
the golf tournament.
The golf tournament, yes.
I mean, the Monogram Club has come a long way since the complaints we used to hear about player relations with the former players. I think it's come a long way. And hey, me and you got to shake Tyrod's hand, Sam. So that was pretty cool, too.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, Pete, when I first met you, we're at the NC State game the day before, and we're at Tots, and we're hanging out. And Bruce Taylor is there and is just chilling with everybody. He's taking pictures. He's doing, and I, you know, that may not have happened 6-7 years ago.
I will tell one very quick funny story from Spring Jam because you reminded me. Bruce Taylor walks into Spring Jam. I recognize him. We had met him that night. And so I was like, hey, Bruce, good to see you again. You know, you're a former player. Like, you're welcome to come in, enjoy yourself, like, no charge, whatever. And he's like, how about this guy? Can this guy get in? He was the kicker. And I'm like, yeah, that's a good one. It's just scrawny looking white guy. You know, I'm taller than me, but I'm not a tall man, but skinny. And I'm like, good one, Bruce. Just keep moving. You pay the price. They come over with their tickets. I scan them. It's Chris Hazley because I see his name pop up. I was like, you were the kicker. I'm sorry, buddy. But I kind of knew him through an old friend of mine who was in his frat. So like we had a good laugh about it. And he considered it a donation to the Sons of Saturday. So there you go. But I shook Chris Hazley down for a ticket. So what can you do? Bull and Bones. Sam and I are going to talk a little bit about the beer that Sons of Saturday brewed with Bull and Bones, but we spent a lot of time there. You and your parents had dinner there, Sam, and we were hanging out in there before Spring Jam. And so that relationship is just getting started with the beer, but that was a lot of fun being over there. And then before the game, I went up on Chicken Hill, like early in the day, saw Don V, Stephen Wright, Dan was up there. Brian Siegler was up there. And then a lot of us made our way over to do the pregame show at Tots, which was fun. I put together kind of a mashup of that last night with some improved audio and put it on the YouTube channel. So look for that. It is definitely worth a listen for a Hokie pharmacist alone. But but Sam's content, Brian Siegler chugging a rail, Billy Ray being hung over, like it was pretty great. So I would check that out on the YouTube channel, but that's about all I had from the weekend before we get to the game and some other stuff here. Sam, did you have any thoughts on it?
It's slowly becoming one of my favorite weekends of the year is spring Always. Game weekend. I think Virginia Tech has done a phenomenal job, especially compared to other schools, of making spring game weekend a big deal. Not because the game is that incredible, but because everyone's kind of coming back to town. And so it's one of my favorite weekends. I'm looking forward to next year already. I know we have a whole football season before that, but dude, it's just a great time. Like, mark it on your calendar for next year. It'll be roughly the same weekend. Make your way to Blacksburg.
Oh, I did also want to mention that Southwest VA shop, SWVA shop, who makes our merch, was also there, pop-up shop at Spring Jam, selling their stuff at Sweet Magnolia and whatever. So I'm going to pop their hat on just as a little, you know, thank you for them to showing up and selling all those Masters hats. Mike, they sold out of those things. Like,
Like
I know you were hunting one. I'm sure they'll get it back. And that Sam's holding up the Blacksburg Bombers sweatshirt that they made.
Blacksburg Bombers up 3-0 on Radford right now. Support the brand, Blacksburg Bombers.
But, I like this hat because they make the Richardson low profiles, which sometimes the hats are just so big. Love the traditional Southwest VA logo and hat. So shout out to them too. Women's basketball. Quick couple updates before we get to the spring game. They're retiring the 33. I know it's something that the Suns had tweeted about when they put the video up at the spring game. The Suns tweet was on the video, so that was really cool. And then WNBA draft was last night, and Liz Kitley was having an Aaron Rodgers moment there for a little bit. And it was making me very sad because there's no way she sticks around to pick 24 where she was taken by Las Vegas if it's not for this knee injury. Is that your thought on it, Sam?
Yeah. I mean, from what I know too about the WNBA, which is admittedly little, they have more professional level players than they do professional level roster spots by a good amount. And so not all the players who got drafted are even going to make the roster in their first year. However, with Kitley and the contract she signed, she's guaranteed to be there at least 2 years. So the first year is her rehab year. She was coming back from that ACL. And then the next year will be her rookie season, her Ben Simmons-esque rookie season.
Right, so, right, right.
And if you don't know about the NBA, it is the Las Vegas Aces are the best by a mile. They're the best organization. They have the best team. They have the best players. Asia Wilson, Candace Parker, a bunch of other stars. They had a sweet draft. They got the point guard from Syracuse. The other 3-point shooter from Iowa. I forget her
name. They had so many picks. Like, they really cleaned up.
They had a ton of picks, yeah.
How does the best team get so many draft picks?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering.
Angel Jackson from Jackson State, who I believe is the second HBCU player ever drafted in the WNBA. There's a little
Mike, I guess it could be kind of like OKC, right? Because OKC is the top seed in the NBA Western Conference, and yet they have more picks than just about anyone in the NBA because they're run well, you know? And I guess well-run organizations can do both. The men's team picked up a couple of commitments recently. We'll talk about their impact later in the show. Softball, I wanted to check today where they came in ranked because they were 16 last week, but they have won 5 in a row and mercy ruled all 5 games, a combined score of 60-7. So the softball team is kicking butt, 14-4 in ACC play. The people I stayed with, my friends Karen and Ron, they put me up. Shout out to Karen and Ron. They went to all 3 softball games this weekend. They are huge softball fans. They take their girls. And so I wanted to dedicated Hokie fans. They needed a shout out. And thank you for letting me crash in your basement. Baseball is number 23 as of, which I'm actually surprised they're still number They're still ranked, right? Because they're ranked this week, but they lost the GT series, including a 19-0 thumping, and they got swept by Wake Forest before that. Sam, give us a little baseball update.
Not a good 2 weekends. Wake Forest is a top 5 team in the country. They were playing poorly. They turned it on against Tech. It happens. They were competitive in all 3 of those games. They really were. Ball strike call goes one way, ball drops in the gap for Tech, and they might take one of those games, right? The Georgia Tech series was, I mean, they won 11-1 on Friday, played really well. Brett Renfro was amazing. And then Saturday, I think they had like 19 walks in that game.
Oh my God.
Like, they just couldn't find the strike zone. And then on Sunday, they up 7-0 in the 6th inning, feeling great, and the bullpen just imploded. Georgia Tech scores 11 runs. Georgia Tech's a good team, especially offensively, but they just kind of collapsed again. So the story for Virginia Tech against Georgia Tech was the pitching just wasn't there, especially just in terms of command. But, you know, they're playing pretty well right now against Radford, and they'll figure it out. The series at home against Duke is the series. They That's need to win one. That series. Yeah.
They're top 10, right? Duke is top 10.
Yeah, Duke is very good. But Tech can beat Duke. Tech can beat Duke. So this series, and then they play at Chapel Hill the next weekend. I think you got to go 4-2 in those six games.
Yeah, got it. Thank you for that, Sam. I think that just about covers all the stuff. Now we can actually get to the stuff I know people want to hear about, which is the spring football game with Colt Holmes. If you're watching on YouTube, give us a like before we get into this content. That would be appreciated. I did want to start with Mike just telling us a little bit about his coaching career, just to vet yourself to the listeners, Mike. Like, how did you get started? How long you've been doing it? That kind of thing in a few sentences here.
So, I spent over a decade as a high school football, baseball. I coached wrestling for a few years. I've done kind of a little bit of everything, but I spent six seasons as a head coach in North Carolina, and then two in Colorado. I mainly focus on the offensive side of the ball. So you'll notice that in my analysis, you know, and I'll kind of dive into that a little bit when we start talking about the defense. I really focus on the offense. It's what most people follow when they watch the ball game, when they watch True. Games, that people follow the ball and they're not really paying attention to what technique the D-line's playing in or, you know, where the linebackers are lined up. Unless you're a Virginia Tech fan, then you know where every linebacker is at every time. That's my background. I was offensive coordinator at 4A level, 3A level in North Carolina. I was in Winston-Salem. I was outside of Winston-Salem. I was in Charlotte for area for a little bit of time. So I've kind of bounced around the state, and then offensive coordinator in Colorado Springs at a school, a 4A school there, and then head coach at a 5A school in Colorado. And I stepped away a couple of years ago. Left teaching, and so had a career change, and this has been so great with the Sons of Saturday being and you guys being able to stay involved in the game. And you'll notice, you'll see my hands pop up.
That's
all over
fine.
The place, but I use my hands when I talk. So thank you, YouTube. You'll be able to see all that.
Official position is football film analyst for Sons of Saturday. Put that on the resume, Mike.
Yeah, 100%.
Yeah. So this is compared to me and Sam, we got an expert on our hands here. So this is going to be great tonight. The game was 21-7 maroon at the half. And just if you didn't know, they split the teams up. Orange and maroon instead of maroon and white or orange and white or whatever. We had the color war. So that was kind of fun to watch. But that lead was built on the backs of Drones and PJ Prelu really making some nice plays. The game ended 21-14. The second half, there wasn't a lot of scoring, obviously, but still things to observe. Big picture, Sam. You watch the game. It's over. What is your story of that spring game? Who or what was the story?
What was the story in terms of things that we can take into 2024, or what was the story of the game?
Just the story of that individual game in its own right.
Tech is a really talented team because they looked really good and you didn't see a lot of starters play a lot. I think the speed and size is greatly improved. I think for me, that's the key. And then I also think, that's like point 1A. Point 1B is they seem fully bought in and the vibes are really high. Guys were jumping up and down. Dorian Strong was doing full on cheerleading routines on the sidelines for the orange team. Like, I think he was actually on the field during play while he was supposed to be on the sidelines at some point. So that was great to see from a senior leader. So these guys are bought in. They're big and fast. I love it.
Mike, what would you say the story of the game was?
We look complete as a team. There's so many spots where you can look at a spring game. You can go look at, you know, NC State, who they tweaked their format or whatever, and they just lit it up to make, you know, to hit the SportsCenter top 10 highlights. You got Alabama, who will not even play their starters, and they use it kind of as a spring evaluation period for a lot of their guys. We looked as complete of a unit from on the sidelines, from a communication aspect, from coaches communicating in a split environment. I believe Chris Marv talked about it too when they had their in-game look-in. He talked about how the communication was really good between the defenders, and that's hard to do in a spring game. I think if I had to sum it up in a word, it would be complete. We looked whole.
Yeah.
Whereas in the past, offense may have looked okay, and defense is always ahead of offense when you're in the spring. And the defense looked okay, and at least we didn't have 10 guys out there like Florida did in their spring game on special teams. We were able to do the little things right. And I know Coach Pride talks about all that all the time with the 100 level stuff, making sure that we're mastering that in the spring in phase two. I think we did a really good job of putting all of that on display on Saturday.
Neither of you said what I thought you might say, which was PJ Prelu. That was the story of the game.
Oh, right there. I got plenty to say about him.
Okay.
You mean Christian McCaffrey 2.0?
Yeah, right. He was looking like Bryce Love out there, like body type, shiftiness, whatever. We'll talk about him in a second. But I would say, piggybacking on what Sam and what you just said, is the depth. Like, it looks like we have depth at a variety of positions where there hasn't been depth before. And so that's very encouraging. Let's start, Mike, let's go to tempo. Something you talked about. What did you think about the tempo of the offense, the play design? Because some of that stuff I feel like was what we were doing last year and will translate into this upcoming year.
Again, like, you don't want to show everything in the spring game. And we ran a lot of simple passing concepts, rolling the quarterback out, moving the protection, shifting it to one side or the other, making it easy for drones. But as with regards to the tempo, the new communication rules that are in play for the NCAA this year, you could tell right away how quickly drones was taking to that. They were using hand signals, I believe, for the wide receivers and for the ancillary players, but drones was getting the calls, relaying them to the line quick, and they were snapping the ball that first couple of series within 15 seconds. So it keeps the defense on their heels. You know, I don't think we will huddle this year except out of a timeout.
Okay.
That's the way it looked in the spring game. And I know that if they're doing it in the spring game, that means that's all they've been practicing.
Yeah.
For the last 15 practices. So it looked really, really good. Even, you know, Pop Watson, you could tell him and Dylan Wickie, you know, they were having trouble hearing at times because it was loud. You know, even on TV, it was loud in the spring game. You know, so they're having to cover their ears, and you can kind of listen to them getting the call. I think it's going to be great for that continuity of call. That means that every single call, you're not going to have guys on the sidelines. Pop Watson's going to have a headset in. He'll be able to hear exactly what's being called, or Dylan Wickie, whoever's number two. It's really going to speed things up and make things more efficient and keep the defense on their heels.
And what did you think about, in terms of the play design, like the schemes that they were doing? Like, this is what you're talking about, like a mix of the gap and the zone schemes. Do you think that will, like, we saw some of that last year, obviously, and it seemed to be executed pretty well in terms of how both quarterbacks were doing it. A little bit less so from Pop, but it looked smooth at times.
Yeah, the difference between a zone scheme and a gap scheme, for those of you who don't know, and I'm going to use my Frank Beamer hands, so make sure I get in front of my camera. So in a zone scheme, everybody's moving in the same direction. And what we did a lot of, and we ran some play action off of that, the first two drones touchdown passes were off of play action off of that split zone look. So you had all the linemen moving in a zone to one direction, and you have an H-back or a wing-back or a tight end offset that comes back against the grain to kick out that defensive end that's left alone. And that split zone look, the regular zone run look, a gap scheme is where you're blocking back against the grain and you have a lineman or a single or a double lineman pull play side. So you're blocking a gap down versus stepping to the side of the play. So we were doing a good job of mixing that. I will say the first Prelo touchdown was Montavious Cunningham pulling on a trap, kicking out that end, and it opened up a massive hole to run. I'm 43 years old. I could run through that hole. It was massive. But both drones' touchdowns were play action off of that split zone look. And what it does is that isolates single defenders in the flat, and it isolates defenders in the secondary. So you have a flat defender. Usually it's a corner. Sometimes it's a drop linebacker that's sitting out there. If you have one guy, and it's a levels concept. So you got a guy short, you got a guy mid, you got a guy deep, and it just puts those guys on an island. So drones was able to make the play fake, roll out, and he was able to basically have one read. As soon as that guy stepped up, he was able to hit the secondary level. If the secondary comes up and takes away the bottom two, you got the deep guy. It's a really simple play design. It's a waggle concept. If you've ever played Madden, but I'm an old wing T guy. We used waggle. That was my number one pass play because it's really hard, even at really good defenses, to cover all three levels of the field on half of a field that's shrunken down.
Yeah.
So they did a really good job of mirroring that in.
I noticed on the big PJ Prelu reception, I believe it was this touchdown reception, where they did that kind of waggle, and then you have the running back come out and puts him one-on-one with the linebacker. He actually got one-on-one with Gabe Williams, a true freshman who came this spring. Gabe Williams, really athletic guy, but like he doesn't have a shot right there to cover a running back one-on-one. You don't know if he's going to keep going straight, go inside, whether he's going to curl around, or you also had to worry about drones rolling out because there was no one in front of drones, and Prelu just cooked him, and he didn't.
And that's the great thing about it, especially if you have a mobile quarterback that can go out there and run. You have a guy that's going out, running back that's going out in the flats, but that linebacker also has to be careful keep his eyes in the backfield and be looking for that quarterback run. And especially when you're a young guy, that's something that you really have to look out for.
This is already great. I'm already loving this so much. Okay. I want to get your guys' thoughts on QB play, because Pop in particular was someone that a lot of people were talking about. Do you think he held the ball a little too long at times, or was the fact that like you only have to tap him the reason that we had six sacks and all that pressure? Your take on Pop's performance, Mike?
I think he looked like a redshirt freshman. There is a – his decision making for him and Whitkey is just a half step slow. So the sacks that happened in the game where it looks like they were just kind of holding on to the ball. I know again, they don't want to show everything. I really wish they would kind of have rolled him out of the pocket a little bit more instead of having them just stand back there. But I think it was good to see which wide receivers could get separation on those intermediate routes. To see how the line is going to block in that five-step or three-step game that we have out of the shotgun, show the different protections that we're going to use. Sometimes we slid the whole line. Sometimes we did a half slide and then kept man on the backside with a running back. So I don't think you can really take much from what he showed other than the more reps he gets, the internal clock in his head will start clicking a little bit easier. And they will use him like they use drones. Him and Wiki's not as, I don't believe, as much of an athlete as Pop is, but I think you'll see him continue and move and progress as the season goes on.
What were your thoughts on Pop's?
Yeah. He did look like a redshirt freshman, and he kind of looked how you expected him to look. I don't think he played great. I think there are some definite issues size-wise. They had to roll out the pocket. They had to roll out the pass protection for every pass play because
he was on the move a decent amount.
The one that they didn't was tipped at the line for an interception. And was that Burgos who?
Yeah, it was Burgos. And then
because he had a
Copeland. Copeland picked it off. Yep.
Copeland picked it off. We'll talk about the defensive line later, but I mean, he had some decent receptions, but they were kind of a wide open. He had a wide open Jennings who had a big yards after catch, and then Jalen Lane juked Caleb Woodson out of his socks and had a big game.
And then he immediately got taken out.
There's your highlight. Get out of here, man. I think he's definitely has an arm on him, and he's definitely an athlete. I just wonder if he'll be able to grow into an ACC quarterback, not only with his size, but also is he good enough throwing and running to be able to overtake, you know, Davi Belfort or Keldon Ryan or whoever else comes in. I know Brent Pry said after the game that one of the areas that they will be looking in the spring transfer portal would be a veteran backup quarterback. Now, he might want a veteran backup quarterback. Well, I want a Porsche Cayenne and a vacation to Tahiti. We don't all get what we want.
Yeah.
I don't know where he's going to find that veteran backup quarterback.
Yeah.
But I think there's room to grow. But the raw tools are definitely there, man. They're definitely
there. That's what I was going to say is that I completely understand what you're saying, Sam. And I think a lot of people had similar observations. I just think you could still see the raw talent and how good he could potentially be. And whether those guys were open for passes or not, I thought he put some passes on the money, and he was dealing with a lot of pressure. That maroon D line was coming in after him, and he looked thicker, just a little bit thicker than last year. He was very slight before. So I do think there was some size put on. And like Drones in last year's spring game, where you can't really emphasize his talents in a spring game, his ability to run, his ability to be elusive. Like, there were so many times where Pop got sacked and it's like a tap on his shoulder. Like, he wouldn't have gone down. A couple of them, he would have been killed. But
they almost didn't give him that touchdown.
Right. They almost took away the touchdown. But that would have been a touchdown in a real game because he would have been able to break the tackle and get in. And so I actually was pleased with Pop. And I think if we had to rely on him against Boston College, Pitt, I don't know. I think he could get it done. I think he could play well enough to get it done, because look at our offense. He's surrounded by talent. Like, that's a favorable position to put any backup quarterback in.
You know, he might be able, and he's a great athlete. I don't want to demean him to game manager, quarterback or anything, but if you needed to, hey, we'll run a few read options with you. We'll get you out of the pocket, hand the ball off to Tootin and hand it off to Malachi. Get the ball out of your hands, man. Like, they can definitely win playing that game.
Okay, let's talk about running back and PJ Prelu here. He was shifty. He followed his blocks pretty well, at least in my opinion. 91 total yards in the game. That's a lot for a spring game for a running back. 62 rush yards, a 31-yard rush TD, which looked really nice, and then the 22-yard TD catch. He did it all, and he made Childress look silly on that one run. And Mike, you said you had a lot to say about PJ Prelu. Were you impressed? Did this like knock your socks off or what?
Yeah, there was so much good that he did, and you could kind of tell that he almost felt like he had a little bit of a chip on his shoulder. One, because he's a legacy, right? His dad's on staff. His dad played there. He's a Hokie legend. So you could kind of tell that he was really, really wanting to show out. And that running back room is legit stacked. You know, I didn't see Tootin play a snap.
Right? And he played two snaps and he never touched
two snaps.
The ball.
Yeah. He never touched the ball.
Which was great. Get him out of the game. Get him out of the game. Let him dress out. Get him out of the game. But Malachi Thomas looked really good. Jeremiah Coney looked good. You know, Prelo pretty much elevated himself. He's going to be that third option. But the thing I liked hearing Pry talk about when they did the interview section. He mentioned that they also got him playing some slot back. So he's going to be involved in the passing game. He's going to be a little more Christian McCaffrey-esque, not comparing him to Christian McCaffrey, this one spring game. But he's going to be that guy that you could flex out into the slot and move him around and be a weapon in the passing game, where you're going to have not even a nickelback. You're going to have an outside linebacker or a safety on him that's not going to be able to hang.
Yeah, I mean, we talked about in the pregame show that today was somewhat of a tryout for 2025 for a lot of guys. And I think PJ Prelu and Jeremiah Coney they're ready to step into that Tootin and Malachi Thomas role next year.
You know, I mean,
don't forget about Tyler Mason.
Right.
He looked really good in limited action for having been on campus for 3 months.
Right. And he set all those records in high school. Like, I've been excited about Mason, but it's like, now I'm excited about three guys below the guys we already know can play.
This offense is tailor-made for running backs. It is it is designed for Saquon Barkley-esque players. Not Saquon Barkley. Again, we're not going to say that, but you can tell it's designed around having one, two, maybe even three really good running backs.
Yeah. I talked to some guys at one of my old schools after that game that that Tyler Mason in high school last year set the North Carolina record for 6 rushing touchdowns in a half.
Yeah.
Against the
he didn't
the
play
school,
second
of
halves
schools.
Of a lot of games, right? Like he didn't play fourth quarters or second halves.
North Carolina has a 40-point blowout rule. So if you're up by 40, you know it's a running clock. But he said that guy is every bit as legit as he looks. He said it doesn't matter that he played at a 1A school and Mount Airy plays some of the best 1A teams in the state because they are always contending for the state championship. It doesn't matter. He would have succeeded at a 4A school. He would have done just as well. So really excited about what he's got coming in the future.
When we were talking on our pregame show, I had a Grant Wells Award for someone who has a standout performance, but maybe doesn't follow it up in the regular season. It could be because of actual, like how good they really are. But I had said it was Jeremiah Coney because there's just not enough snaps to go around. I didn't think PJ Prelew would have this performance, but Coney lived up to me to having a standout performance, 87 total yards. And we're going to talk about the defense in a few minutes here, but like all these rushing yards is making me from not our top backs is making me just a little concerned about another one of our positions. But let's talk about offensive line. Cause you mentioned Montavious Cunningham, and on the long play to Malachi, the longest play of the day, the Moore brothers were out running in front of that screen, and Cunningham, mm-hmm. I think he made that first block to kind of open things up. Do you think he's going to end up being a starter at right guard?
I think he's and I y'all clowned on me earlier. Yeah, when you guys had French on in the
I talked to French about this too. Yes, no, I don't think we clowned on you. You said is he a guard or a tackle? You thought guard, French thought tackle, and it looks like you might be right.
So I'm looking completely at just his size, and I'm looking at it from a perspective of when I used to build my offensive lines, I wanted to build them from the inside out. A lot of teams want some teams would like to build them starting with your tackles. I'm putting my best lineman at tackle, and then I'm filling in towards the middle. I want my best three guys to be my two guards in my center because they're the guys that are going to pull the most. They're the guys that are doing most of the communication. I think that Cunningham being there, he has tackle level feet, guard body, which is going to be, I mean, you saw him pull and kick out on the Prelow run. He got to a cornerback on a screen, on a running back screen. Like he can move. He's a large, large athlete, and seeing him make that play. There's now granted, we do have some other stuff to worry about on the offensive line, but Cunningham is just I think he's got that thing anchored down.
You would rather him stay there than potentially move one spot to the right and take over for what could be an issue, because we saw with Burgos specifically kind of giving Parker Clements a hard time.
Yes. Now I will say, one, again, here comes Frank Beamerham. With that protection that we were running, we were calling slide protections. So usually you'll take the slide protection, you'll call it, the center will call it, or the quarterback will call it to the wherever the shade technique is. So the guy that's lined up in the A gaps, if there's just one, they'll slide so that center can pick up that A gap because it's a hard reach to go in the other direction for that guard to get there. So normally when that happens, you got your splits, you're set up already. Defensive lines can adjust. But if you have a slide called, Parker Clements, who was at right tackle, he couldn't let that inside gap go. He could not step out like he probably needed to get Burgos, because his responsibility is going to be that left side gap. So having that there, and when he slides and then he gets into his drop, now Burgos was set up at a wide nine technique, so he's not even lined up on the outside of the tight end. He's wider
than
that.
He's way out there, yeah.
He's way out there. That's technically supposed to be the responsibility of the running back to pick that up in a slide. So the running back is supposed to come over and slide over and pick up that, which is a big ask for running back to go pick up Burgos. But a lot of times in our passing game, we're three steps and the ball's gone. So we're three steps. We're making our pre-snap read. Ball's gone. All the running back has to do really is chip. And so go back and rewatch on some of those sacks. It looked like Clements was – they were all shifting to the left, to one side, and there was just nobody there, and the running back was just late to get over. That's just a design. You can adjust that later. You can shift the back over. You'll notice that every once in a while, you'll see the quarterback kind of wave the running back around his back to the other side. Mm-hmm. That's what they're doing. They're calling the shift so the running back can go across the formation and pick up that defensive end. I could be completely wrong. I don't know the ins and outs.
No, I mean, listen, I think that's some good perspective, because a lot of times in football, as fans, you watch something and your eyes see this, blame goes here. But sometimes the call is bad. Someone missed an assignment. And so that is good perspective. Sam, did you want to get in here on the offensive line at all?
I think they're much better run blocking than they are pass blocking. I think it's just the nature of the players they have right now. And I think you can tell with how they run pass pro, but also they're really good run blocking. And I think they're really, really good in the screen game. That screen to Malachi Thomas was perfection.
Yeah.
And Caden Moore.
He didn't even have anyone to block. He's just running.
He was running step for step with Malachi Thomas for about 40 yards and then started to slow down a little bit.
Like, it was a great Jason Kelce impression.
It really was. And I tell you, Christian Darrisaw, I think, is the last Tech lineman that I saw kind of have that feet on the outside. Wyatt Teller kind of developed that in the NFL, I think, a little bit more. But I think they have a good offensive lineman. And I think they're going to grade out at the end of the year very well. However, the players that they do have on offensive line right now, to me, they have a tendency to have those uh-oh moments. And like we saw it in the Florida State game a little bit, where it was just immediate pressure on Drones.
It was too much.
Yep. It was too much. And I think there's a step up that they need to take that I don't think, at least from what I saw in the spring game against a very, very good defensive line, who I said was top three. I think they're going to be top two in the ACC. They had those moments. So I think they'll get better. However, Virginia Tech did offer Andrew Chambly all freshman SEC tackle from Arkansas.
Yeah, that would be nice, huh? That would be nice if we could get that guy.
I'm not saying that we can't improve either.
No, like, we improved last year.
I'm not saying that we can't go into the portal and improve, but I think if we, for some reason, we're stuck with the guys that we got, take the girl that brought you to the dance, or dance with the girl that brought you, whatever that expression is, you are going to see, especially from left tackle, left guard, center, right guard, it's going to be very solid. They're not going to be world beaters. I think we're going to be good enough, especially now that we're running more of an outside zone scheme and we're kind of letting our athletic guys get out in front a little bit and let our running backs just see the cutback lanes and go, put their foot in the ground and go. I think you're going to see a lot of really good things from them this year.
Let's talk about receivers before we take a break. And when I say receivers, let's encompass the tight ends, because we saw Hairston had the TD on that play action fake you had kind of mentioned earlier to Prelu. And then Zeke had four catches in this game, Zeke Wimbush, the new guy. And then Harrison St. Germain was out there, had some guys out that we'll rely on as well with Gallo and Gosnell. But then you look at the receivers and Jennings looks like his old self. Green looks like a player with four receptions. Heath had four receptions. Lane, you talked about the jab step that he put on the move, and he looked just like he did during the season, looked great. Chance Fitzgerald had an awesome catch and 55 yards in the game. And then XTB, who we've seen make plays in the regular season, had a couple grabs as well. The depth of receiving options, specifically at wide receiver, but also at tight end, is just starting to make me giddy. Like, it's because if anyone, like Chance was a guy I hadn't even heard much about, like I had heard about a lot of the other guys, but Chance, he redshirted last year, whatever. He looked great. He looked athletic and he made a play on a toughly thrown ball. And so I just can't believe it. Like, I just can't believe yet another one of these wide receiver pickups might be a hit. Cause normally you have your misses, right? It's hard to find a miss in that wide receiver room right now.
It's an embarrassment of riches.
Yes, it truly is.
And you didn't even mention, you know, Brody Adams.
Right.
Who's probably going to get some run at some point. I would love it if he redshirted. In this day and age, though, it's probably not going to
happen. Let's have a conversation about that in 1 second, but keep going.
Oh, yeah. But so with the tight ends that we have, you're going to have a couple of guys, Gosnell, St. Germain, and Gallo primarily, that are going to be your guys that can do a little bit of both, that can block on the edge and then can also get out there and help you in the pass game. Gosnell was a 4-star guy. We took him from Ohio State. You know, I've coached against him and his brother Steven. They were at East Surrey High School in Pilot Mountain, North Carolina. They're again 1A products from the Northwest 1A Conference. They are dudes, both of them. And we didn't even mention Gosnell. Gosnell will be back. And you talk.
Yeah,
about
I was talking mainly about the guys who played, receiver. But you're right. Chance Wiggins.
That's
didn't
how play. Many there are, Pete.
Brody Adams didn't play. Gosnell's hurt right now. So Tucker Holloway has a little bit nicked up. So yeah, it's ridiculous. It is absolutely ridiculous. And you mentioned
before with the running backs in the screen game. Don't forget about those wide receivers that played with their screen game with Turner Bradshaw, with Takay Heath.
We ran around with Tucker in the UVA game.
We have all those guys that can move around and get east and west, and that just puts your defense in such a bind.
Let's that redshirt thing. Someone asked me this at the bar. I think it was Stephen Wright, and he said, "Pete, we got, you know, these 4 stud wide receivers from last year. We got new guys coming up. We got some guys like XTB who made a little bit of a name for themselves. How we have to redshirt the younger guys, right? Like, wouldn't that be optimal to redshirt a Brody Adams or a Chance Wiggins?" And I was like, there's no way you can redshirt Brody Adams. Like, he was a top 10 player in Virginia. He comes here expecting to play. He knew what he was getting into, without a doubt. His father said as much when he was on Boundary Corner. But the real counterpoint to the redshirt idea is that if Brody Adams is as good as we think he can be, he's not staying past 3 years anyway. So the redshirt really don't matter, because either he's going to be off to the NFL in 3 years after 2 good years after his redshirt, or he beats someone out this year, or he transfers to another school, because guys don't stay in school 4 or 5 years at the same school. No. Like, if you know what I'm saying? So like redshirting for non-linemen, I just don't really see it as a thing anymore. Like, especially at the first school, maybe once you get to the second school, you want to extend your stay. But I don't know. I don't see him getting a redshirt would be my thought on it.
To me,
Sorry, go ahead, Sam.
No, it's to me, redshirting has become more of a defensive front seven, offensive line thing, maybe quarterback thing.
Yeah.
Quarterback. If you have a guy who just really loves the school and knows they want to be there, it's not really a skill position thing anymore, for better or worse. But I just jotted down to help mentally compartmentalize these guys, like our starting 4 wide receivers and then their backups. So yeah, like Jennings, Lane, Gosnell, Felton for the starters, they're all gone after this year, no matter what. They're gone. Behind them, you have Green behind Jennings, Fitzgerald behind Felton, Adams behind Gosnell, Wiggins behind Lane. They immediately slide in to the same positions. Like, you have your 2 slot and then your 2 outside wide receivers, to simplify it, that have to play next year because we lose our 4 guys. They're out of eligibility. So that's kind of the selling point, I think, to these guys and why they're sticking around. Aiden Green gives me Cam Phillips career vibes. Not the first 2 years, not the number 1 guy, kind of sitting behind some stars. By the end of his career, he's going to put up some numbies. And I think he knows that. I think the team knows that. And I think who they just bring on to the staff, former player. Who was it?
Within the last month?
Yeah. Oh, it was Cam Phillips that they brought on.
Oh. you knew the answer.
Yeah. I'm just saying, they know what they're doing in the wide receiver room right now.
Cam Phillips was out on Friday night. Saw him too. In terms of Aiden Green and Cam Phillips comparison, Aiden Green much bigger. Mm-hmm. He's a much larger person. But all right, let's take a quick commercial break, beer break, and then we'll come back and talk about some defense. And the Hokies Under the Influence podcast is brought to you by Roback. Roback is the only performance activewear that's designed for those who crave activity. That's right. And the Commonwealth, which is the beautiful polo. Sam's got his hoodie on right now. Super comfortable. Wait, go ahead.
You keep going with the ad read. I'll be right back.
The Commonwealth is the white polo with the maroon Virginias. And if you're down in Blacksburg for any given game, you will see approximately 400 of them because everyone's got them. But that doesn't matter. You need one too. You want to be a part of the cool club. You can head over to roback.com, load up your cart, 2Deep VT. There it is. 2Deep VT to get your hands on that sweet polo. It's 2Deep VT, 20% off your order. They've got the quarter zips, which they have the Berg as well, which I saw some of those this weekend too. Joggers, shorts, tennis skirts, and the hoodie that Sam is modeling. I already said this, but load up that cart, 2Deep VT, 20% off. Roback, crave activity. For right now, Sam, I need to know what you're drinking, and I also need to get final thoughts on the Shandy that we tried. And Mike, we're going to ask you next. Are you drinking anything over there, Mike?
Oh, yeah.
All right.
This is a super beta move right now for me. I'm not drinking beer again on this show. However, I do promise I'm going to a six-pack store in downtown Suffolk, going to get some fun, quirky beers. It's going to be great. I'm on a juice cleanse. So right now we have chocolate cashew, cashews, dates, pumpkin seeds, cacao, and vanilla.
If I can think of anyone that needs to go on a juice cleanse less than Sam, I can't come up with it.
This is why we're here. Like, this is why we're at where we're at, because we make these sacrifices. I got to tell you, though, this is absolutely delicious. It's like a chocolate milk smoothie.
I'm a big cashew fan, so I'm okay with what you're doing. That's so fine,
but from now, no one yell at me. I know it's a partially a beer podcast,
but absolutely. You had your beer on Saturday.
I had plenty of beers on Saturday. I think it is a really, really good beer.
The Shandy.
Yes. And you have to understand, like, a Shandy is a very un-beer type beer. If you haven't had one yet, they're not as popular as some other styles of beers. And
love them.
This is a beer that's like meant to be drank ice cold. So when you have it, make sure it is ice cold.
Oh, I got some news on that front too.
It is going to go down so easy. It is the slightly lemony, slightly citrus. It's not as aggressive as some other shandies like a Leinenkugel. But it's crisp. It's fresh. It is very drinkable. You're not going to feel heavy. It's a great, great spring and summer beer. You know, if you're in Blacksburg, you got to go grab some.
Yes, I would agree with everything you said. When it's hot outside, shandies are fantastic. We talked about Leinenkugel when we did our video, but like the Porch Rocker is always a good one. Any Rattlers from my local place, I really enjoy. And the thing I heard in reference to the being cold, Sam, is that Bull & Bones is in the process of fully revamping their cooling and tap system. So when you go in there this fall, you are going to get ice cold, fresh Saturday Shandy. So that's something I just heard about today. So that is, that's exciting. Mike, what are you drinking over there?
I am in, on a work trip in Salt Lake City, Utah, this week. So I have a Squatters Juicy IPA from Squatters Brewery in Salt Lake City. Very good. You have to, in order to get anything in Utah that's above 5%, it has to be in a can. So it's just the way things are. If you get a draft beer, it can't be more than 5%. So it's a pretty good low ABV. I think it's 6.5%. But it really does use those none of a Northeast style, New England style IPA. So it's got that hazy color. Can't really see it because it's in a can. But really good fruity notes, kind of grapefruity, orangey flavor, and really, really delicious.
Dude, what a pro review. Really love that. And you being out in Utah, you were able to hang with Billy Ray. You had lunch with him about a month ago, 3 weeks ago, something like that?
Yeah. I got to hang out with Billy Ray one of my trips out here, and then I got to hang out with Pat during a different trip. Yeah,
that's
I'm
awesome.
Here usually every couple of weeks, but it's a it was fun seeing the boys out there in Park City.
Heck yeah. I'm drinking the Hazy Dawn by Cape May Brewing Company. Cape May is about an hour from my house, and we go down there quite a bit. Been to the brewery, but they sell this everywhere in South Jersey. It's probably, if not number one, the number two or number three brewery in the state. And Jersey makes a lot of good beer. But the Hazy Dawn is an 8% double with tropical waves of flavor is how it's described. And I would fully endorse this beer. I'm not always wanting to drink doubles, but on a night when I'm doing the pod and maybe I only want to have one beer or two beers, it's a perfect time to bust out an 8% hazy beer. So loving it. The Hazy Dawn by Cape May Brewing. Defensive observations. Let's go back to the game here. And I want to flip over to the side of the ball that was having all those rush yards, you know, going against them. We didn't have Lawson out there. We didn't have Stroman out there. We didn't have APR. There was no Fuga. So we're missing some of our main guys. And even with all those rush yards, the defense put up 13 total sacks in the game. Maybe not all of them would have been real game sacks, but nevertheless, 13, four total fumbles forced. Two were recovered by the defense and two interceptions by the defense. Burgos had that sweet pass breakup grabbed by Copeland that we mentioned. Burgos was kind of a menace in this one, right? Like three sacks for him. Mike, what did you see out of the D-line that you were impressed by? Because you had mentioned some of the coverages being wrong, but doesn't that also mean that the defense was doing something to confuse them?
Yes. The defensive line, again, we're not going to show any games. We're not going to do any stunts. We're not going to really put a whole lot of blitz packages in the spring, at least put them on film so offenses can scout them. So one of the reasons that you saw a lot of rushing yards, I believe, is because of that. We were kind of playing a vanilla-based defense and just letting the ends go.
And they did.
But Kamari Copeland is an absolute beast. He is going to be trouble for a lot of people that we play. I am not really – I know we'll probably get to linebackers here in a minute. I know it's probably a big point of emphasis. But as far as the defensive line goes, again, I wouldn't take too much from it knowing the guys that we had out. I think they did very good. They made some plays in the backfield on the running backs occasionally. I think it's really good, especially because when you had a mixed group, you know, communication is always going to be difficult when you got a mixed group in there. So the ones aren't all running together. The twos aren't all running together consistently in practice. So that's going to be a big – that's going to be – cured just by the season starting. You're going to have all those guys out there together at one time, and they're going to be used to communicating, used to knowing what they're going to be able to do with each other.
Sam, did you have any commentary on the D-line? Because I got some other guys that let me do this. I'm going to read off just a couple more commentary on the plays and stats, and then I'll give you a chance to comment. James Jeanette, a guy we haven't heard much about, made a really nice TFL beating HSG. I think that's where I was going with that. Harrison St. Germain. Three total tackles for loss for James Jeanette. A sack and a hurry. That was someone that we didn't talk about at all last year. Was a JUCO guy. Quite frankly, thought he might be on the chopping block. And he comes out and he looked great. Two sacks for Jason Abbey in a hurry. And then Hicks, two sacks and a hurry, probably towards the end of the game. But Sam, what did you think about the defensive line?
They're monsters. They're absolute monsters. Anais Peebles is like, he's so fast and twitchy. And then you could just see the push and the speed that Kevin Gilliam was getting, what Burgos was getting. Like, those guys are menaces. I legitimately think this is the best. They haven't played a snap together, so I shouldn't say that. But this defensive line has potential to be the best defensive line we've seen since 06, 07 time.
Are you going back that far?
I was about to say 07.
I mean, the only one I could think about is when we had Settle and Ricky Walker at D tackle. That was like, oh, we got 16 up there.
Yeah.
Yeah. But they didn't have the depth that this team does.
No.
And so I just think defensive line, they are special. I think defensive end rotation, I think they might end up being a little thinner than people think at defensive end. So I wouldn't be surprised. James Jeanette is a guy who came in as a defensive end. They moved him into like a D tackle D end hybrid. I think after some injuries in the spring game, he might move out back to D end in a depth piece.
Yeah,
because he does look.
That's what I
was making plays. Yeah.
So let's talk about those linebackers that you mentioned, and you gave a good explanation on the rushing numbers. However, if you look at some of the plays out there, it seemed as if the linebackers were going backwards. They seemed maybe a little confused at times. Maybe not so much poor tackling. That is something that we saw during the regular season. I'm not sure that was what I'm so much worried about. It's more of like, I don't like to see your linebacker like backpedaling or completely being out of the play.
Yeah. There's those linebackers had, again, I think a lot of it was too, I mean, we were playing Gabe Williams out there quite a bit. We had some really young guys in there, and it does take a minute. You know, you're going up against 300-pound offensive linemen. You know, it's kind of hard for some of those smaller freshman linebackers to not get put on skates. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to really – and a lot of times athleticism in a run blitz type of look, you're gonna see a lot more activity during the regular season from those guys where they're not – and the way they may have been coached in this game – to kind of play back at depth, you know, it just kind of read and react. I'm just thinking about how I, in a scrimmage type situation, that I would want my linebackers. I don't want them to get caught in the scrum, get rolled up on. Now we're down more depth. You know, there's a lot of other things at play. I think also too, just like with the defensive line and the secondary, defense is all about communication. It's all about knowing and trusting the guy next to you. You got two linebackers, like they got a bar between them. So if they start scraping, you got one guy going to the A gap and the other guy's going to the outside. You know, they're all moving in unison with one another when they're reading and reacting. So I think a lot of times if you're not used to one guy playing next to you, if you got a guy that's usually running with the ones or twos and you got a guy that's at three or four next to him, there's a reason why he's three or four. You know, he's usually a half step slow. So that's going to provide you your gaps because one guy's going to be playing up and he's going to be reading and reacting properly. And the other guy's going to be that half step slow. Like we said with Pop Watson earlier at the quarterback, that half step means a 1 or 2 yard gain versus a 7 or 8 or 9 yard gain.
Yeah, no, and that's well said. And everything you're saying makes a lot of sense. So I want to ask you about Brumfield because he's the one that, we're pushing our chips in on him at Mike. You know, they went out and got him and we didn't really bring anyone else at the position. And it was a position that struggled last year. In the short spurts, how do you think he looked moving around and everything?
I think his horizontal movement east and west is leaps and bounds above where we have been. I think that he made some plays. He ran, I think it was Turner Bradshaw. He tracked him down, had the great angle on the sideline, and he was able to get him out of bounds on an early play. Just movement east, his movement east and west, I think the more comfortable he gets in the system, I mean, he's only been there for 3 months.
Right.
So as more he gets a feel in that system, I think he's going to be just fine. I love the comparisons that some of the coaches, when they were talking about him, how they were talking about him. Chris Marv, you know, he was an all SEC performer at Vanderbilt. And he says, yeah, he's just like me, but he's bigger, stronger, and faster. You know, he really likes the way he fits in that system. I think he's going to be much better because of the way he's played against high caliber SEC talent in the past. He's going to be able to not be, even though he's going to be consistently playing against P5 teams, he's seen it. He's been there, done that, got the t-shirt. So he's going to be able to see that. I think he's also going to be better in that Mike role of being able to drop back in coverage if need be.
Being able to
sink back. I think his athleticism is going to be, with his size, is going to be a lot better. Now he's slightly undersized, you know, but he's got better feet. I think he's got better athletic ability. I think he's going to be just fine. I would really like to see more film of him, to be honest with you, before make the full assessment. But I also think the summer is going to be massive for him. As long as he can stay healthy over the summer, he gets rep, he gets work. And then when August starts rolling around, I think we're going to see he'll cement himself in that role.
Okay. So we kind of went through everything here, maybe a little bit less on the DBs, but I thought for the most part, the DBs played pretty well. We don't have Stroman out there playing safety or anything. I wanted to kind of get the overall thoughts on just final observations from the game. And as we kind of transition here into the off season and into fall camp, like what was a takeaway? I asked you for a story game earlier, final takeaways from the game. And Sam, I'll ask you first.
Yeah, I think my takeaways are we're a little bit better in the spots we thought we would be good at and probably still have issues at the spots we knew we would have issues. Like, I think the offensive line is missing a piece wherever that piece is and however they need to shuffle it. And I mean, you just talked about linebackers. I thought there were times where I put some in the Twitter chat, Pete, where you're watching some of those big runs and you look at one of the linebackers, you're like, man, where are you going? Like, there was a play, a read option where Jeremiah Coney got a big run. Don't want to take away from Coney, but the middle linebacker who had the quarterback on that play never moved. The ball's handed off. After the ball's handed off, he then goes and covers the quarterback. Like, dude, quarterback doesn't have the ball. You don't need to play that role anymore. The ball is gone. I do think that linebacker room instincts feel to be growing, right? I think they still have a lot of guys who are changing positions in that room. And like you said, Pete, can't use that excuse forever, but you do. And I think at the offensive line, you have guys who are, some guys are going to be able to grow and take that step forward. Some guys aren't. Some guys are at the top of their potential. And I think over the summer and in fall camp, they're going to figure that out. I do think we bring in an offensive tackle in the portal and then a best available guy, because Tech is inevitably going to lose somebody. And a depth piece or something.
Whether it's a linebacker or a safety, or you're just saying anywhere. Yeah.
Somewhere, best available guy. But overall, man, this is a darn good football team.
Yeah. Like, Mike, what were your final takeaways?
I think before I said that we looked complete. I would say that the growth is obvious from every perspective of the program, from how the coaching staff carried themselves to how the players were acting on the sideline to how we looked on the field. There was I'm not going to say swagger because that's a Miami thing, but they looked confident. They looked like they knew what they were doing. They understood what their assignments were. Now, execution is a completely different thing, but I think everybody on the field, all 22 that were on the field, they looked like they understood what their role and their responsibility was. And we were playing as a unit, not a collection of individuals, where I think in the past it was, hey, I'm D-line, I'm going to go get mine, I'm going to eat, versus I need to play my role as a part of one of 11 on defense and trust my teammates to go make plays. It didn't always work, but I think that was a change that happened at the middle of the year last year that we've seen continue to grow. And I think that's just a testament to senior leadership. It's a testament to the culture that's being developed throughout the entire program, where, you know, it's not necessarily, even though it plays such a huge role, it's not necessarily all about who's getting a big paycheck, who's got this deal, who's got X and Y, who's got the car, who's got whatever. It's more about this team has got to be successful if I want to get to where I got to get to. If my goal is to get to the show, this team has to do well,
and
not just me.
Pry has seemed to preach that, and they have seemed to buy into that. And that is what is so great about this team, and what all the messaging we get from the program and the team seem to incorporate that as well. I would say that before the game, I felt good about this team, and I still feel very good about this team. Sam, you put out the thing, do you feel better or worse after the game? I think I feel better about offense, and I think I feel slightly better about defense as well.
Let me check the results of that. I forgot to write those down.
And I know,
stay with us.
Yeah, because we had the concern, and me and Sam both have expressed it, the concern over linebacker. But I had that concern before the game. So say that's the same. I feel even better about the D-line. I feel even better about the wide receivers, which I was already ecstatic about. And with the way we run blocked in this game, I feel better about the offensive line too. And so overall, I think the spring game is a win. I know Billy Ray always says you can't take too much from a spring game. I'm not taking too much, but if you're asking me if I feel better or worse, I'm saying I feel better.
84% better, 16% worse.
Okay.
And I'm going to guess the people who said 16% worse, it's about the offensive line, pass protection.
Could be. Could be.
Yeah.
Now I have the final, I have the final awards from spring practice. We, it's going to hit them on the top, but I figure we do them at the end. Most improved cornerback Mansoor Delane and wide receiver Aiden Green. If Delane's winning most improved, that's a good sign. That is, that's really nice. Cause he was already a good player. MVP QB Kyron Drones, defensive tackle Aeneas Peebles, and linebacker Jaden Keller for special teams was MVP. Leadership award, defensive tackle Josh Fuga and center Caden Moore. Love to see that. Two guys in the middle of your lines win the leadership award. And then ultimate teammate was cornerback Miles Ellis and running back PJ Prelu. So not only is he shifty and quick out on the field, but he's winning the ultimate teammate award. Mike, we've taken up too much of your time. Thank you so much for coming on with us, man. You really helped us break this down. We appreciate it.
Hey, anytime, my pleasure. It's been a real treat. Thank you guys so much. And anytime you guys want to talk ball, just hit me up.
Be careful what you wish for, because we're going to get you back on during the season more than once. There's no doubt about it. So we're pumped about that. We're going to let you go. We're going to do a little bit of basketball coverage, and then we'll close this thing out. But Mike, thanks again. Have a good rest of your night.
Thanks. Cheers, guys.
Later. Okay. Quickly, Sam, we're not going to spend too much time on this, but I did want to, I said we talk about the men's basketball commitments because we didn't get to the last two that we've had. We've added Ben Burnham from College of Charleston, a 6'7", 220-pound small forward, and then Rodney Brown from Cal just committed over the weekend, a 6'6", 180-pound wing. Not sure exactly what position he plays, but we're going to go with wing, maybe a 3-and-D guy. I was pretty excited about both of these commitments.
Yeah, both of them are three-point shooters, which fits Mike Young's system. Mm-hmm. I think Burnham's a bit more developed. His coach left to go to Louisville. I think he's a guy who can slide in and, you know, be what Grant Pasilli was, be what Robbie Barron was, that style player. And then I think, you know, all we've heard about Rodney Brown is that he's a bit of a project player. A lot of athleticism, can really shoot. Got to clean up a lot of aspects of his game, though. So it's a test for Mike Young. Here you go. Talented winger. Can you make this one work? And it'll be a test. So I think they're getting some guys. They're getting talented guys that other big-time programs are after, which is kind of how you can tell how good of a transfer pickup it is, who else is offering them.
Yeah, definitely.
A lot of work to do.
I would say with Burnham, this guy is solid. He's played 3 years. His junior year, he was at about 12 points per game. Charleston was a good team. 4.5 rebounds, almost a steal a game. And you said the three-point shooting, he was 38% from three over his three-year career. So a consistently good shooter.
That's not the volume of Hunter Couture, but that's about where Hunter Couture
was. No, it's maybe a percentage point here or there lower, but like it's solid. And then Rodney Brown, what impresses me about him, I know he's raw, but during his freshman year, he took 58 threes and he made 40%. Freshmen are notoriously bad shooters because they're adjusting to new gyms, they're young, their shot selection is usually poor, whatever. 40% from three with that kind of volume, because he's only playing 14 minutes a game. And so whenever he's getting in there, he's letting her rip and he's making 40%. 3 years left of eligibility. I think he could be a really important player for Tech down the road if Mike Young can develop him. And that's been the question, right? Can Mike Young keep a guy in the program and develop him? The guys that he's had, even for short periods of time, have gotten better. We saw MJ Collins get better. We saw Tyler Nickel get better. And what I'll say about Ben Burnham, last thing here, is that his rating on the transfer, and I know this isn't perfect, but his transfer rating is the same as Tyler Nickel. It's the same as MJ Collins. So I don't view it as a downgrade. He's probably somewhere in between those guys.
We just talked about that in the last pod, Pete. It's how this stuff works. It makes the whole financial situation of the men's basketball program so frustrating, because every single player who has stuck in Mike Young's program has gotten twofold better. Oluma couldn't dribble a ball and then was all ACC. Justin Mutz, raw athlete, is now playing professionally. Lynn Kidd goes from like not even sniffing playing time at Clemson.
Not at all.
To a double digit scorer with ease in the
Got
ACC.
A bag from like, Miami for, because of Mike Young.
I mean, could Kator and Aline go from Wofford recruits to ACC champions and big time players? Like,
oh, a national champion in Aline, by the way.
And a national champion in Aline. Like, it makes it so frustrating because if you're just talking basketball, Mike Young's going to make you a good basketball player.
Yeah.
The issue is all the other stuff. And Tech basketball's got to figure that out. And they have about 6 months to do it.
Not every transfer has been perfect. We know that. Robbie Barron maybe underwhelmed slightly, took Tyler Nickel a little time to get his feet under him. But once he did, I think he was moving towards the player we expected to get. I like these two pickups. Mm-hmm. That's where I'm at. There are two really, really nice pickups, value pickups, 9 guys on the roster now, Sam. We've got a few more to go, but at least we can get out
almost
there.
Almost scrimmage.
Almost play 5-on-5. Get a walk on in there. You got 5-on-5, baby. But yeah, 9 guys on the roster, 4 bigs, 2 point guards, and 3 wings as it stands now. But the wing position, I am starting to feel good about. I really am. Like that, I like what we got in these two guys.
They'll figure it out. I think they have 2 good freshmen coming in who are guys who physically can play. Somewhat similar to Jaden Young, who he physically was ready to play in the ACC. So I think they'll be okay. They'll be okay. It's a rebuilding year. They got to get their feet under them with this program, but they're going to be okay.
I meant to say this earlier. Part of the great thing about this weekend was also running into a lot of people that said they enjoyed the pod. And I can't remember all the names, but I do remember Anne, who I met at the Rutgers game. Her and her husband came up to me, said how much they still enjoy the show. That was great to hear. They said they're liking you, Sam. It's a little bit of a change, but they're dealing with it.
could never replace Robbie. Just next man up mentality.
Right. But no, so many of you came up and said hello. And I got to hang with a lot of people that, you know, from all the various tailgate crews. You guys know who you are, the people up on Chicken Hill. I said a few names, Whistle Pig and Karen and Learn in Life and all the fun people that I got to see up there. I got to hang out with Don V. I don't know if I said that earlier or not, but that was cool. Had never met Don before. Nice guy. Tech lover. You got to love it, man. So that was what was cool about this weekend, is to connect with so many people. That's what was so fun about our pregame show, is that all the voices that you hear and see on Twitter get to come together and be nerds together and maybe not socially awkward together for a few hours over some brewskis.
Can't ask for a better weekend, Pete.
No, it was a lot of fun. With that being said, we're going to close out the pod. Thank you for listening. Coach Holmes was awesome. I think people are really going to love this episode. If you're still here, make sure you like the video. Make sure you're subscribed, following us on Twitter at 2DeepVT, following us on Instagram at 2DeepVT. And until next time, go Hokies.